Welcome back, everyone, to State of Belief Radio. I'm Welton Gaddy. We're all values voters now. It's easy to reach that conclusion, at least, when political campaigns seem increasingly built on appealing to constituents' values in morals and religious terms. But now here's the question. Does that really elevate the political discourse? Or does it draw the language of faith and ethics into the morass of electioneering? Well, here to talk about that is Duke University Associate Professor of Theological Ethics, Luke Bratherton. Dr. Bratherton, welcome to State of Belief Radio.
Thank you very much indeed.
When you look at some of the grand ethical themes being put in the service of gaining an uptick in the polls of one of or two-tenths of a point, do you see a disconnect there?
I don't tend to. I tend to take a little bit of a kind of historical perspective. One of the more surprising things, I think, about this current debate is if you wind it back to the 60s, the new left in America mm-hmm. gave a very profound critique of the lack of values-based language and discourse in politics, and the kind of emphasis on very utilitarian and kind of dry numbers-based debates as driving politics. And they very much called for a kind of language that would reinvigorate and re-engage American people. And in many ways, what we can see is the coming to fruition, ironically enough, of a call from the new left mm-hmm. by the new right. And the kind of debates we see around things like sexuality and abortion and things like that, which do energize voters. So it's not the issue for me is not that we shouldn't have debate issues that have a strong values focus, if you like, mm-hmm. To them in public. It's the question is the tenor and tone by which we do it. And I think often there's this: do we have values in political discourse or not? It's kind of false dichotomy. We should debate these things. These are really important questions. Mm-hmm. The question is, how do we do it, and in what tone and tenor do we go about it?
Oh, that's a great insight, and it's a good segue into moving from theory to reality. What do you see and what do you hear when every campaign issue is promoted in the language of faith? I mean, does it, as I said in the introduction, does it primarily elevate the discourse or does it cheapen it?
I think one of the problems with it not elevating, saying it doesn't elevate it, is that basically it's used and deployed in a way in order to kind of polarize and personalize mm-hmm. so that it creates this divide, either you're with us or against it. And right. It kind of simplifies the issues and refuses the possibility of common ground and a common life. But there was a wonderful quote, I think, by the governor of Florida recently with Hurricane Isaac coming in about, he said, hurricanes are not a bipartisan issue. But we could extend that. There's lots of issues that are about the common life that we have together. The way in which a lot of the kind of values-based rhetoric and framing in terms in religious discourse or otherwise is used in very divisive terms. But it might, we could equally see that used as ways of talking about common life, about things we all hold in common or things that are important for us to sustain a common life in which each of our individual flourishing depends. So it's, again, I just kind of want to refuse this idea of either we've got to have values rhetoric or got to completely expunge it from public discourse. I just think these are problematic false dichotomies.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, but I can't help remember that Pat Robertson, for example, did not agree with the governor of Florida. He thought that tornadoes and hurricanes were tools of God to call people back to righteousness, and I think that's a little divisive. Also, let me get you to be the definer of this. Are there debates right now going on that you wish were less couched in religious language, or is that just a natural expression of what ultimately matters to a majority of the voters?
I would take the opposite view. I would take the view that I think there are issues which should be more couched in religious terms, primarily around economic issues. So, for instance, it's very striking for me. Everyone's very uncomfortable about using the language of usury.
Mm-hmm.
Yet that's a big bit of the financial crisis we're trying to work through. And if you look at foreclosure crises and things like that, it's about the power of debt over individuals and over families and the destruction of family lives and communities and kind of excessive interest rate charges and things like that. Well, that's a very religious language of usury. And people have used as a contrary language of jubilee. Now, these are religious terms with rich religious histories, not unproblematic. But so I think it depends which kind of religious language. There's a great joke I sometimes use in class. The only thing that really divides conservatives and liberals over their use of scripture is which bits they read literally. And, so I think there's a kind of sense in which, you know, it's not whether religious language, if this is the language through which people express their deepest held beliefs and commitments, mm-hmm. however problematic, and our example of Pat Robertson would be a good example of that, that is, in a democracy, we need to know what people really think and where they're coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And be able to learn to talk across often very different ways of framing things. And that's part of the art of building a common life, is working across those kinds of differences. Now, I can't do that if everyone's pretending to be nice New York theater-going liberals, because I'm not really meeting them.
Uh-huh.
So the question is, how do we learn to deal with difference in relationship,
mm-hmm.
And live at the borders? Borders are where we actually meet others, meet real points of difference, but learn that borders aren't necessarily threatening places where we have to set up ramparts and defenses and big chain link fences. Uh-huh. They can be places of encounter.
Yes.
The problem is that at the moment we only see them through the other, through the grid of a chain link fence. We don't see the other as that border is a point of exchange and trade and kind of mutual learning. Now, I'm sounding very kind of wishy-washy, but I think these are important kind of ways of anchoring and getting beyond this sense of either we got to expunge religious language or we got to have more of it. But it's.
Well, see, I can't help but tell you that while I was listening to you, I was imagining some people with whom I've had this kind of discussion before, and my imagination was saying, they're saying, oh, man, listen to that guy from Duke. He is speaking our language. And then you mentioned economics, and I could hear them say, oh, well, I didn't know he was going to go there. because, as you well know, religion, and I'll say especially religion in the South, has no trouble using religious language about sexuality and what are called, I suppose, matters of personal morality. But when you get into economics, you've started meddling in the basics of life.
I think that's a very very good point. It's a very good point. But it kind of illustrates the issue that it's where is. Religious language is being deployed in certain kind of places and not in other kinds
exactly,
of places.
Exactly.
But I think there's a very crucial issue here. Is what I would say to those people who are very happy to use it in relation to issues of sexuality and gender and the like,
mm-hmm.
And those who are very uncomfortable about seeing it in terms of using it to talk about economics, is that ironically, they are themselves marginalizing the place of religious language. They're mm-hmm. saying, here is this realm called economics, which can be free from theological framing or religious framing, and is kind of neutral, and it just works by laws of nature, supposedly. Mm-hmm. And here is these other things, which are highly contested and we have religious debates over. But that in itself is an act of self-marginalization. Now, I'm not saying I will necessarily agree or not agree when it comes to the different ways of thinking about economic questions, mm-hmm. social mm-hmm. justice questions in theological or religious terms. But the key thing is to leave that somehow as if it has nothing to do with Christianity is itself an act of self-marginalization and self-secularization. So I'd call on Republican figures to actually to deploy religious language in these spheres. Now, I think some people are, and I think there are. Mm-hmm. The striking one is Paul Ryan, mm-hmm. you know, who's an interesting figure, how he can connect Catholic social teaching, which has lots to say about economics and injustice mm-hmm. and those kinds of issues, with Ayn Rand, mm-hmm. who was a militant atheist, I think is an open question. And I'd be interested to hear him, how he reconciles those two very, very different schools of thought.
I have to say, I love the point you're making. And I think the one other thing that that what you're suggesting does is it causes someone to think whether or not one really does want to talk about morality and political issues, or whether they want to do that only when they can use morality in their favor. Mm-hmm. And having said that, let me ask you, if you had the opportunity to sit with the political advisors of both major candidates for the presidency, what would you say to them in terms of what you would like to hear from the candidates, what you'd like to hear more of than you're hearing, and what you'd like to hear less of than what you're hearing?
I certainly would like to hear less of this kind of polarizing, personalizing and polarizing talk, which refuses the possibility of a common life. You know, at the end of the day, we do all have to live together. Mm-hmm. Hurricanes do affect us all, mm-hmm. Whether they're economic hurricanes or weather hurricanes. So there's the issue about creating space for genuine politics, the negotiation mm-hmm. of a common life around contested issues of shared concern, if we can take that as a kind of definition of politics. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that the upholding of the value and the moral endeavor, the moral place of political life, i.e., that this is a moral exercise, politicians. I want to celebrate politicians, not denigrate them. Celebrate them as people involved in a moral exercise of this process of negotiating a common life around things that are very important. At the same time, I do think issues both around poverty and a serious debate around issues of life, both a consistent theme of life, including things like capital punishment, as well as the whole question of the levels of numbers of people being incarcerated in America, and how do we value life, both of the unborn and those who are in trouble who have done wrong. And so I think that would be a very serious and a very important that relates to a whole range, whether it's medical ethics or what's going on in our prisons. So I think the questions about life do need to be on the table. It just needs to be a kind of a broader perspective, and there will be differences of opinion, but it's an important debate to have. But that also needs to be accompanied by a very serious commitment to how do we get beyond a positioning of others as completely beyond the pale, mm-hmm. as completely, you cannot talk to these people, and if you talk to these people, that's to be compromised. No, that is to make politics untenable and therefore immoral. It suddenly is to overpaint politics mm-hmm. as an inherently bad exercise. So you have people talking about, my role is to be able to shrink government down into size so I can flush it down the toilet. Well, that is to say politics is not a worthwhile activity. Mm-hmm. So why would you give your life to that? Why would you give your life as a politician, as a public servant, as someone involved in public administration? I want to say that these are important tasks that involve moral questions, and it's right and a good vocation, but it does take a commitment to a common life first, and then we have very vehemently held differences about how we go about building that common life. But it seems to me we put the differences first and the common life comes second. I just think the equation's wrong.
I've been speaking with Luke Bretherton, Associate Professor of Theological Ethics at Duke University and Senior Fellow at the Kennan Institute of Ethics. Great, great thinking and wonderful observations. Dr. Bretherton writes widely on religion and politics, as he well should. I hope we'll be able to call on you again. This is great conversation. Thanks so much for being with us today on State of Belief Radio, Dr. Bretherton.
A delight to be with you, and thank you for the opportunity.